And we are back with episode 365 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight I have...
Gary from Jacksonville, and I will help to carry this whole show because our other intrepid reporters have not shown up yet, or will show up perhaps in the future.
Yes, who knows? We are definitely going to be kind of off format right now because, unfortunately, Bronstein got pulled into a real-life situation, a.k.a. work, and Edmund is off doing some kind of other thing that, you know, is far more important than we are, you know, how all this...
I'm sure he's feeding the needy or, you know, reading comic books to, you know, people who are blind or transcribing what some of those British sitcoms are actually saying with some of their different phrases. I still don't get some.
That's right. That's right. But, you know, he's just not going to be able to hear the story of all the fun that was had at New York Comic Con.
Oh, I'm really interested. I heard attendance was insanely packed, even more so than last year, and they had a few good panels that I would want to quiz. I want to hear about myself that I didn't get a chance to get a sense of reading some of the reviews.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting time. So there's really no need for a disclaimer here. A lot of this stuff you can go ahead and find off on YouTube if you really want to see the panel or anything else. But there's going to be some things that I'm going to talk about that I don't know that anybody else has even written about, which is kind of odd to me. But yeah, this will be the New York Comic Con recap for the most part, and we may have a few things towards the end that, as usual, we give you time to watch it, and certainly since I was away last weekend, you've had plenty of time to catch up on these things, so yeah, no disclaimer for now for spoilers. Let me get right into it, and Gary, you kind of mentioned that, yeah, the numbers for attendance were higher than they've ever been.
I saw some numbers were over 100,000 for the weekend.
Well, you see, it was more like 130,000. It was... A greater number of unique attendees, let me put it that way, than were for San Diego Comic-Con. So that made this the largest con event of the United States for the year. Now here's the caveat to that. In the past, they would have a lot more four-day tickets or three-day tickets, and unfortunately there was a great deal of counterfeiting that would take place, or people would get around the system. They game the system pretty well. One way that they used to do it is if you were an exhibitor, for instance, you might only apply for one batch because it would be a lot easier to get you in at your booth. But then you would basically trade off your badge through the fence or through some other place to, you know, your five or six other friends that you want to have help work your booth, and they just can walk in because there's no control over it. And that was going on, and that helped to make the floor incredibly packed on Saturdays and Sundays especially. This year, what they did differently is that all the tickets, all the badges had RFID tags, and you had to check in and out when you went. So you could pass off your badge if you really wanted to somebody outside, but if you were already inside, it wouldn't let them in, and if you went outside to give it to them, and then they tried to pass it back to you, you couldn't get in because they were already in. So it definitely helped level the playing field.
Well, I'm not always thrilled with Big Brother type right. of technology like that, but if it's becoming such a rampant thing, I suppose that's a less obtrusive way than, you know, stamping, braceleting, or, you know, doing some or tattooing for all I know. Yeah. For people going in and out.
Yeah, the other thing that there was good and bad, and we'll get to the bad in a second that I think everybody has heard about by now, but the good thing about that was they also took... Before, they would give out single-day badges for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And so the only people that got in on Thursday were the pros, the press, the four-day ticket holders. This year, they actually sold Thursday tickets, which wasn't too great for those of us who were looking forward to having an easy first day without any crowds. But they also limited the number of single-day passes that they gave. So there were some people that only showed up on Thursday or Friday. There were people that only showed up on Saturday or Sunday.
Well, so, typically Saturday is the crunch day anyway,
right?
By,
yeah,
for
exactly.
Most cons.
But what I found, and what a lot of other people found, was that Saturday this year was nowhere near as crowded on the floor as past years. It was actually, there were only a couple spots where it got really busy, the main areas and crossroads, I guess you could say, on the dealer's floor, for instance. And the entrance was occasionally a little bit jammed, but they didn't have everybody wait outside like they used to. They had a queue hall. They managed it pretty well. from what I understand, in the queue hall, even when it was time to let people in, instead of just opening up the gate and letting people in, they would let so many in at a time so that they could go and disperse, and then a minute later let, you know, another 20 in, and so on and so forth, so that, yeah, it might take a little bit longer to get in, but when you do, it's not completely jammed in all of the entrances to all the areas.
Now, I think last year you mentioned they were doing some construction there. Is that all gone, or?
Most of it was done, and certainly all the construction that was affecting the floor. So instead of having the main floor for the dealers and stuff in the booths all split right down the middle like it was last year, which made for difficulty getting from one side to the other, it was all wide open. That was a huge, huge help. And just in general, I felt like... Oh, and then the other nice thing about it is that the second largest hall, what they called the Empire Stage, was no longer sectioned off into sub-rooms or whatever you might call it. Instead, they had the main stage and then the Empire Stage, and that way they could take the bigger panels, the ones that were more highly attended, and split them between the two. And then they had all of the smaller panels in the A section, of the subfloor, and then the B section was all the autographs and that kind of stuff, and then the C floor was the Q hall. So then D and E were the main halls, and that just made everything a lot easier. You didn't have to ask where did you need to go. You knew exactly where each thing was. You weren't trying to get through the autograph lines in order to get to something else. Everything, if you wanted to go and see the celebrity petting zoo, as everybody calls it, you could just go to that section, and it was off on its own. You had to go and find it. If you wanted to go to Artist Alley, it was once again in the northern hall, or pavilion, or whatever they call it, and it was almost a convention of in and of itself, just like it was last year. And since everybody knew that, I think that they got even more traffic this year than they did last year, because it's like you intentionally went there, and you spent a good amount of time there. So they had their own little, you know, they had some food vendors there. They had, you know, a good crowd. Like I said, I think it was more crowded when I went over there on Saturday and Sunday than what I remember from last year. But it was the crowds were far more manageable. It was a lot easier to get around. I never felt like I was jammed in, and it was nice. I mean, if they can maintain that next year without trying to go too overboard with increasing the numbers, and that would be a concern.
That's what I was going to ask. You know, as they're reaching these numbers, I mean, it's still a, you know, a fixed space. At some point, I guess you said they had caps on Thursday's tickets, but do you see caps on the rest of the days coming up now? Or,
well, there were, because they sold out. So I'm assuming that there were caps on everything. I guess my worry is that there are some panels that got relegated over to the A hall, where they only had maybe like 100 or 200 seats. That clearly had a lot more popularity than that. And there were a lot of people that had to be turned away. And I could see them looking around to say, okay, do we need to become like San Diego Comic-Con or Dragon Con for that matter, where we have to look for secondary facilities? You know, Javits is great in that it's all in one place, but like you said, it's a finite amount of space. They're going to run out. And I mean, let's face it, the big Saturday night panels that everybody wants to get into, you can only fit maybe 3,000 people in that hall. Who knows how many tens of thousands of people are there on Saturday trying to get in. So could they try to find some place nearby that they can use? I think they're probably going to eventually have to do that.
Oh, just take Madison Square Garden and be done.
Yeah, I mean, it's only a few blocks away. It's no big deal. and that to me was probably the biggest, on a personal level, the thing that I found most enjoyable was that this year, for various reasons, I wound up at a hotel that was right in Times Square on 39th Avenue, and it was only a couple blocks away from the Javits Center. So getting around to all the places in Times Square that I wanted to go, either after hours or even getting to and from Penn Station, was just a few blocks walk.
And now you talk nice. About walks and stuff, and I'm used to the primary convention I go to is Dragon Con every year, and everything's sort of right in one hub, but including like parties and things like that. But from what you're saying, you have to sort of travel a little ways to get to events after the official convention's over for the day.
It depends on where you want to go. I mean, you're never going to have, other than the Thursday night kickoff thing, which this year was a comedy show, so that didn't really appeal to me. There's not really an on-site party or event, everything is going to be at some other place in Manhattan somewhere. And depending on where, what you choose and who you want to hang out with, if you even know who's going to be at a given event, then you could wind up having to walk, you know, a good amount of space or take a cab. This year, even though they forecast rain, it didn't rain one drop in Manhattan. It was upper 60s, lower 70s the entire weekend. So it was very comfortable. Last year, it was cooler, so walking around, you felt like you needed to, you know, throw on a sweatshirt or whatever. And so when you got to the Javits, it was obviously going to be warmer, so it felt like you were either not warm enough or just sweating completely as soon as you walked in the door. But this year it was very nice. It was a good fall, early, you know, relatively early fall day, so it made for a very comfortable time. If you had to walk around, you weren't freezing, and you could just enjoy it. But you know, getting back to that, I mean, certainly it was this was the probably the first time that I was going to an after party every night. It just kind of parsed out that way, that the people that I wanted to hang out with, that's the way that it was. But Thursday, this was also the con, the first time where maybe because they were giving out these more of the single days and for the first time giving out Thursday tickets just for the day, that they had panels on Thursday that had mass appeal. For instance, the Haven panel, which is usually a later on Friday or earlier on Saturday panel in the main room, they had it on Thursday at 5.
Oh, and thank you for the pictures that you posted. I enjoyed looking at them, yes.
Yeah, I figured you would. The thing is that even for the four-day ticket holders, you can't get into the con until 3 o'clock. Everything before that is for professionals only. Even the press can't get in before 3 o'clock. So to have it at 5 is almost like kicking off the con with one of the more popular show panels. And as I've said both to everyone that I know personally and then you know, on Twitter and Facebook, if you're at all a fan of this show, you owe it to yourself. Go find that on YouTube and watch it, because it's a thing of beauty. The cast is always incredibly happy to see the fans, to interact with the fans. A lot of the time, you know, the fans will go from con to con and, you know, they'll recognize people that have kind of followed them around, which is kind of creepy when you think about it, but let's leave that alone. But you know, they get repeat people at these panels, so they almost know some of their better fans in that respect, and they'll just play to the crowd. And this year, what's his name, Lucas Bryan, I think, who plays Nathan Warnos on the show, decided to answer a question by pulling a guitar out of quote-unquote nowhere and singing a spontaneous, again, quote-unquote, song to the audience, which then Emily Rose and Eric Balfour joined in and added their own verses to the song before they...
So are you saying we should expect a musical episode?
I certainly hope so, and if you listen to this little snippet, then you will probably agree with me.
And every little girl wants to find their place in a corner of the world. When they feel their home, it's a feeling worth saving. Well, I feel I'm home, though I don't feel much, in a town called Haven.
Bravo. Well, he just wrote this in a green room.
I'm not good this year, actually. Does it, while I have a guitar,
anything
that you want? Yeah.
I don't know if I have
anything to add. Just come from the heart. From the heart? Yeah. Let's let it go. Now I have a feeling like I've been here before. But every secret I unlock just leads to 20 more. Somebody like Sean Miller, Brian Milken, or Nick Parker, please tell me who the hell I am.
That was beautiful. That was really beautiful. From the heart.
How about you?
From the balls.
Sailed the seven seas from San Pedro to Rome, but every salty bosom just reminds me of home.
Oh.
I don't want to help, I just want to make a buck. But when you're a pirate with a heart of gold, you just have to give a fuck. We're troubled, we're troubled.
Hey!
Yeah, so there you go. That's the kind of thing that they do at the con.
Yeah.
And from there, it only got better because apparently there were two fans that asked them if they could, or mentioned that they were engaged and were going to get married, and jokingly said, "Hey, while we're at the con, why don't we have a, you know, Haven-style wedding?" So they dragged these two folks up onto the stage and officiated a wedding. Complete with, you know, fake veil. They pulled flowers out of somewhere. You know,
how spontaneous.
Yeah, exactly. It was obviously a little bit, you know, planned, but it had enough spontaneity to it that it was just hilarious. And, you know, the guy who was, instead of just having a microphone up like they do for most panels, they had the guy who plays Dave, you know, Vincent Dave, the brothers.
Yes.
I'm mm-hmm. forgetting their last name off for right now. But Dave ran around and actually passed the microphone to the people in the audience. And Vince was the guy, the moderator, up at the front. So that was cool. I mean, just the fact that the, you know, reporter brothers were the ones that were kind of there. And they came down into the crowd, both the panelists and the brothers, constantly throughout the panel. So it was the most interactive and also just a really good one to kick everything off with, because it got the atmosphere going. And yeah, that was probably the highlight of my Thursday, at least as far as the con was concerned. I did get to walk around, and this year, unlike last year, one of my favorite things to do, of course, is to gather the swag and the freebies. Come on.
What was the good thing this year? What was the big thing?
You know, it's hard for me to say because there were a lot of exclusives, but they were very limited, and I didn't really go for that. But what I liked a lot was that the publishers this year, unlike last year, were giving out a lot more galley copies for free.
Okay.
And this is like my concession to the kids not being able to go to the con, is that my daughter loves the fact that I can get her a good half dozen free books. In the matter
of
minutes.
No, really, they're actually giving out actual books. You know,
yes.
I would think in this day and age they would give you like a card with a QR code or, you know, a download code or something. I'm surprised that you do get physical.
Oh no,
copies.
No, these were physical copies, and I think I wound up, all told, leaving with 9 or 10 books after the weekend, a couple of them signed, and I never waited in line more than 5 minutes. So I was stunned because last year, I mean, forget it. I think I got one book, and that was just because I happened to walk by at the right time. This year, they were a lot more forthcoming. So, yeah, that, posters, comics, I mean, everything they were giving out. But more importantly, I guess, was the fact that, you know, going to after parties can get you a little bit of swag, too. So on Thursday night, the party that I went to, because basically there weren't that many panels that I wanted to see after that. And I don't know, there are some listeners out there that might be familiar with the website, The Mary Sue.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
yeah,
basically,
it's a cute website. It certainly is. You know, it's got a lot of geeky stuff. It's not quite an IO9 level to me, but it's still a little bit more tongue in cheek, I guess.
Yeah. They're relatively local. Jill Pantazzi, I believe is her name, is one of the more well-known people on the site, and she's from this area of New Jersey, and so, of course, she's also a regular at New York Comic Con. And they were having their meetup party on Thursday night. So that was probably the longest walk, speaking of walks. I was staying at 39th, and the party was on 19th. Which would have been a problem, except that I had forgotten something rather important that I had to make some phone calls in order to get replacements for, and I had to go down to, like, 23rd Street in order to do it. So I was already having to find my way down there, and I said, you know what? It's a really nice night. It's relatively warm. I might as well just walk. And it was actually kind of nice to walk down 8th Avenue and just hang out, you know. I got myself something to eat. I was running a little early, so I just kind of spontaneously stopped at a frozen yogurt place. It was kind of nice just to hang out in Manhattan, you know?
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say Famous Ray's Pizza, but or Famous Ray's or Ray's Pizza, or anyway. Inside New York joke, I suppose.
Pizza place of choice this weekend was Two Brothers. But they had a nice two slice and can of soda for $2.75. It was very good after each day of conning. But anyway, so while I was at that party, I met a lot of cool people. Their site is very much a kind of like a geek girl type of thing, where it's more female friendly. They talk a lot about feminist type stuff, and they really emphasize strong female characters and things of that nature. In fact, that was probably the drink of choice that night. It was an open bar, no charge, so that was nice. But their kind of mixed drink that was the feature drink was the strong female character. So that was nice, and it was indeed strong. But they were also they had a raffle, and they were doing giveaways based on the raffle, and I got one of the tickets that was a winning ticket. And in my bag was largely Doctor Who themed, although it wasn't fully Doctor Who themed, but I got the Blu-ray sets for the seventh series of Doctor Who, so the one that just wrapped up, the first four seasons of The Thick of It, which I think Bronstam has mentioned is the new Doctor's show that he's best known for, the one where he plays the foul-mouthed political analyst or whatever. That's not exactly right, but you get the idea. The most recent, or the first season of Arrow, and the eighth season of Supernatural. All of that.
Oh gosh, when will you watch
that? I know. Plus, a desktop spinning TARDIS that actually like floats above a magnet and spins. So that was all in one bag. I was like, wow, that's not a bad haul for.
Oh, that was a pretty good prize bag there. Yeah,
it was. And that, I mean, there all the bags had a ton of stuff in them. I mean, some of them had, you know, even bigger Doctor Who related stuff, or there were other genre stuff that was in there, but basically you got to go up, and in the order that it was called, you got to pick a bag, and that's what you got. So, that may factor into some future discussions, but at any rate, that was pretty cool, and that was Thursday night. So then Friday was the first full day, and let's see if I can just remind myself of... Yes, this was the day. Basically, three good panels that I happened to sit in on. The first one is probably the most interesting for folks like you and unfortunately Edmund and Bronstam, who can't be there. It was the J. Michael Straczynski writing workshop.
And I heard it was packed.
Oh, it wasn't just packed. Let me tell you, I got there a good 45 minutes early because I figured, okay, it's in a smaller room. But I thought to myself, okay, it's a writing workshop. Likelihood is it's not going to be that bad. I got there and the line was already backing around itself.
And for an average panel, how early do you have to get to a room of that size to get in typically?
Half hour, 45 minutes is a good time frame.
Okay.
But this one, it's like there were people who probably started lining up a good hour and a half before the panel. When I got into line, they were already saying that it was probably already full. When I got into the room, I had the next to last seat, so I was all the way in the back, and after me, they let in another 20 for standing room only. There were at least, of the maybe 200 people in the room, there was at least three times that outside. I was stunned. I was like, wow, this is surprising to me. I mean,
not bad for a guy that ran a 20-year-old TV show.
Right? And not only that, but we're talking about a guy that within the comics industry, at least, there, or among fans of comics, there's a lot of divided opinions about. there are a lot of people who think that he can't write his way out of a, you know, write on a receipt for a dinner check or something. But then you've got all these people that are showing up and really were into it. They wanted to hear what he had to say. And this was not about, you know, talk about your TV show or your comic books. It was ask me questions about writing and the writing process, the writing career, everything. And he was very candid. He was just straightforward. If people were wishy-washy, he would call them on that, not necessarily in a bad way. He'd just say, like, you need to work on that. You know, he was helpful in what he was saying. I actually took a lot of notes.
Oh, yeah, no, I've seen him once or twice and heard several and seen several different panels, not necessarily writing all the time, but he's a very forceful presence, I guess. And if he wants to steer something a certain way or doesn't feel it's going that way, yes, he'll yank on the reins and pull it around to the direction he wants it to be very quickly.
Yeah, now, for those who were wondering, I know that, Gary, you actually asked me this question. I think you texted me or sent me something over Twitter, but towards the end, the free Babylon 5 people were able to get in. There was one guy dressed as a ranger in the crowd that finally kind of got an opportunity to pass around the buttons. But then there was a guy who was in a...
Earth Force uniform?
Earth Force uniform. Very much homemade Earth Force uniform. So he was the only one in uniform, so he stood out in the crowd a bit. But he had the bucket full of things, and he came in, and since I was in the last row, he was standing right behind me. So I was able to turn around at the very end and talk to him and grab some of the buttons from him so that I could put them strategically around and give them out to people. But, yeah, they did get their word in towards the end when the room was the most crowded. But, yeah, they didn't get in initially. But that tells you right there, people who were that motivated to get in there in order to get their message out were outside for most of the panel because they couldn't get in. And they only came in as people would leave because, you know, they were expecting something different from the panel or whatever. Then they would let people in because they were like, hey, maybe you'll only be here for 10 minutes, but at least you'll get in.
Yeah,
he's, you know, some of the highlights says of what he said, you know, the usual things you hear about, don't do it, don't get into it for the money. If you're going to be a writer, you need to find a way to write every day, make the commitment. He said, this was interesting to me, the Writers Guild of America that everybody thinks is this huge organization is only about 10,000 people. Half of them at any given time are unemployed. Which,
well, in a lot of ways, it's like acting. You know,
yeah,
you're
exactly.
Employed while you sell, while you're writing. Chances are, unless you're on hire to redo, say, a movie script or a rewrite of some sort, no, you're all on your own time, and then you have to try and sell what you've made.
Yeah, and he was basically saying that, look, you know, there's this impression that if you're writing for television, that you're, you know, you're making a ton of money and you're doing really well. And he's like, even the people that are quote unquote active members of the WGA they're unemployed. They're looking for work. There's only a few hundred people at any given time that are actually actively working on something, and in a paid capacity. So that was interesting. I think a lot of people found that eye opening. One thing I really liked was when he was talking about the difference between incident and story. Where he was saying some people get into the habit of just relaying things that are happening instead of framing it from the point of view of a character and how the events are impacting the character in terms of why things are happening. You know, the cause and effect relationships of people making decisions and that's why things happen. That was a good part of the discussion. You know, when you're trying to pitch for writing for comics, prepare multiple issue arcs rather than one-shot issues, because that gives people a better feel for what you can do than, you know, because he was trying to make some kind of example of this, and this was one of the quotes that got taken out of context, I thought, and thankfully I was able to help clear that up a little bit because I had taken notes. But sure. You know, he was basically saying, like, anybody can write a one shot and have a good chance of making it coherent, but it's a lot more difficult to pace out a story over three or four issues and have it make sense, have it look as though you know what you're doing, you know, getting the beats correct and so forth. And what he's basically trying to say is this is a way to make yourself look more attractive and more skilled, you know, show off your skill set better than just doing a one-shot. And, of course, people were going to take that as negatively as they could. He had a nice long rant about people giving out their writing for free online, That, I'm sure, was worth the price of admission right there. Not in terms of blogging necessarily, but writers just giving their work out and not trying to sell it.
Well, his friend Harlan Ellison also has similar rants, and I imagine they've discussed it amongst themselves as well. Is that, you know, it's really no different than a bricklayer laying bricks for free, or you know, or someone, you know, a janitor cleaning a place, or a plumber fixing pipes. You know, it's your skill and it's your talent, and you should be compensated for it.
Exactly. It's, you know, he's not talking about writing samples or anything like that. What he's saying is, if you're going to write for somebody, don't do it for free. You're doing a job that people should be paid for, so get paid for the work that you're doing, just like you were saying. Embracing failure as a learning tool, being willing to say no if you don't agree with the deal that someone's trying to give you. Don't operate out of a position of fear that, you know, you won't be able to succeed if you don't go along with whatever somebody's trying to pull on you. Create worlds based on the attributes of the characters you've created. So, you know, he was talking about Babylon 5 at that point. I love the quote that he said, good artists steal, bad artists borrow. So basically saying, like, you know, take what you can from the things that you resource or that you research, or the inspirations that you have, but make them your own. Don't just kind of use it as is one way of interpreting that. Don't submit partial work if you're going to submit to anybody. Don't give them only half the book. You need to actually finish it and show that you can finish a project, because that's one thing that a lot of people mess up. And then one of the other things he kind of wrapped up with was, he doesn't believe in competition between writers, and you know, the catty way that people can be out there. And he, you know, it probably was more to the people that were trying to look to make trouble for the things he was saying. trying to tell them that, no, I'm not trying to say one is better than the other or anything else, but there are people out there that will bash on a writer for choosing to take an assignment and be somewhat hypocritical about the whole thing. He didn't name names, but I think we can all think of who he was probably thinking of. But, you know, it's like, don't bash on another writer for taking an assignment just because you weren't willing to do it, or something along those lines. So, you know, it's a lot of the things that are probably obvious in retrospect, but in the workshop itself, the interaction with the audience was really good. And there was one guy that was having a really hard time public speaking and getting his words together, and so, you know, JMS was able to actually kind of coach him a little bit on how to communicate a little bit more clearly and how to get over that fear. And, you know, he was trying to relate his fear of speaking to someone in public to his fear of rejection as well. And he's like, you know, you can't, you know, if you can't get past that, you're going to have a hard time being ready to submit something, because you're going to be worried about the reaction. And, you know, that's going to be something that you need to work on, because otherwise it's going to plague you the whole way through. So, yeah, there were some really good things that came out of that panel. It was a good way to start off the day. I had already been at the con for a little bit, so that was a good little break. Right after that was... and one of the nice perks of having a VIP pass for the con was that not only in the main stage did I have guaranteed seating, but also in the secondary Empire stage too, which was not an advertised perk, but it was there. So I was able to get into the Walking Dead 10th anniversary panel. This was for the comic books, so I won't talk too much about it, but they were showing some of the artwork that was going to come out in the next year or so.
And the creator was there too, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, he was.
Yeah.
It was him and Charles Adler, the artist. And that was it. It was pretty much them and the fans and the usual thing of people talking about, you know, everything that had happened in the book over the last 10 years. And
so wait a minute. You're saying at Comic-Con they had a comic book panel?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow. What a novel idea. I hope more comic book conventions do exactly that.
Well, actually, it was kind of odd because usually the previous years that I've been there, I made a real point to go to a lot of the Marvel and DC programming. But this year, even though they had plenty of it, it was either right when something else was going on, or I just felt like, you know what? I don't really feel the need to go and sit for them. I'll learn what they're going to have out soon enough, because they get plenty of press. I don't need to go to what is effectively a PR panel. I want to actually go to some of these more specialized panels, and there were a lot of them, don't get me wrong. There were a lot of people that have been to both San Diego and New York Comic Con, and all of them were remarking how New York still has at least a fairly strong comic book presence versus San Diego, which is almost completely taken over by the industry now.
Well, I can't say I've heard good words about San Diego for a few years now, so
right.
It's nice to hear, though, that New York is still getting positive reviews.
For that, at least. I mean,
yes.
There's other things that it certainly were issues.
Yes, definitely.
But then after that, I had a couple hours off and went back to the floor, kind of walked around. I was looking for some stuff for, you know, the kids and other people. There were some really great vendors this year that I just kept going back to their stuff to go and play with, at the very least, because they had some good weapon prop vendors that had some really unique things. They had a lot of anime booths that just had some really interesting stuff that I had not heard of before. They had some costuming booths as well that I thought they had some really unique items. I was gonna
ask you about costuming. I'm not sure if it fits within your day schedule, but
It will.
Or does it? Okay, all right. I'll be patient.
Yes. Then afterwards, they had a panel on the Dark Horse Whedonverse comics. So the Buffy season 10, I guess, that's going to come up, and the Angel and Faith book that goes along with that, and then also the Serenity miniseries that they're going to be putting out soon that takes place immediately after Serenity the film.
Eek!
So, yeah, there was some good stuff there. They had some good artwork. I got a few shots of the artwork of the Serenity book that I put up on my Facebook, or the Critical Myth Facebook, anyway. So if you go in there and you look for the New York Comic Con 2013 Day 2 photo album, you'll see some of the artwork up there. And that was with the camera that I had that had a good zoom, so you can actually read the words that are there.
Yeah, good job on that camera purchase. Those were I've had a chance to go to the Facebook page, and yeah, they're very good pictures. It's worth taking a peek, especially if you're interested in... there you could see the text, but the artwork was nice to look at as well.
Yep. Yeah, the artwork is really good. Let's see. Okay, so that's Friday, and then Friday night I went to a party really close to my hotel that was hosted by... There were a trio of cosplayers that were hosting the party, and I know two of them. I don't know the other one. The first one was Vampy. I think her name is Linda for real, but she's fairly well known. I think if people see the picture, they'll know who it is. Then Stella Chow, or I think he was a friend of hers, and they were there. And it was a relatively small group. It was at a place called the Hudson Pond, maybe, or Hudson Bond, something like that. So it was only about 150 people. It was a relatively small thing, but it was pretty nice. Everybody was very friendly, and they had some video game consoles with fighting games down in the basement area, so that you could go hang out at the bar there and watch people play or play yourself. And then up on the main floor, they had the DJ, and you could kind of meet and greet people up there. And there was this one guy who was dressed as Captain Crunch. He was hilarious. You would think cosplaying Captain Crunch, probably not too much of a draw. This guy had more game than anybody else in the room. I was amazed. and he was in character, and that was the most amazing part. The funny thing is that there's another show on Vogue that it's Anime Jam Session, that when they were talking about New York Comic Con, they had on a guest, Avalon Cosplay is what she goes by, and she was at the party. I had no idea she was even there. I was like, oh, that's you, okay. But just a funny little thing there. Saturday was the big day for cosplay for me. It was, now in the past, Gary, you've talked about wearing, you know, a Star Trek uniform or a tunic. And I've done that. Like last year, I wore an Abramsverse, I guess you could call it, Star Trek Captain Kirk.
Anyway, yes.
And but you know, that's one level. You know, I wanted to up my game a little bit. So, being such a fan of the Assassin's Creed games, one of my more favorable outfits, at least the one that I like the most, is the darker variation of the Ezio Auditore outfit. He was the main character for Assassin's Creed 2 and its two sequels.
Okay.
So, yeah, I spent quite some time preparing all of the various pieces of that. And there is a group that does a meetup of at New York Comic Con, and they've been doing it for a couple of years now. So they were meeting at noon on Saturday. So I was like, okay, perfect day to do this. Saturday, it's the main day, you know, there's the meetup. Let's pull it off. So yeah, I was in full Assassin's gear for the whole day. And let me tell you, you got an outfit that has three or four layers to it.
Oh, you're nice and toasty.
Oh,
and
yes,
praying for hydration. Yes.
Yes. It was an experience because it was really, to be honest, I mean, when you just go walking around, and I'm sure that, you know, when you've been in, like, your Enterprise uniform, there are people that ask to take your picture every once in a while, but it's not the big draw. You know, it's not like everyone stops you because you look like Captain Kirk. You know?
Well, John, honestly, yes. Well, only every now and then, yes.
Yeah, every now and then, but it's not like, you know, you get stopped and you can't go 5 feet. You know, this was a bit of a different experience for me, because obviously we all gathered at noon, and there were a good 60, 70 people at the meetup. So we were a presence, and I mean, we had a good half hour straight of nothing but picture taking at this place where we gathered in different groups. So it was cool. They had it really well organized. One of the ladies that was helping to organize it, actually, there were group shots, and then we did, like, fake action shots because some people dressed as Templars who are, you know, the enemies of the Assassins, so there was, like, mock combat that was done, and then because people dressed as people, as characters from each successive game and era within the franchise, you know, all the people who dressed as Altair from the first game, for instance, those five or six people got a picture of their own. And so they posed, and, you know, dozens of people took their picture. And then they switched those out after, 3 minutes. And then the next group came in, and so on and so forth. And they had, you know, a dozen different ways that they parsed it out so that everybody got their moment in the sun, and that was really a lot of fun. But then, as is the tradition, everybody got together and stormed the Ubisoft, who, of course, is the publisher of the games, stormed their booth in the dealer's room because it's right there in the front at the entrance. So you had 60 or 70 people all dressed in Assassin's Creed gear all just converge on this booth. And this year they were streaming live for their website over the internet. And so you just, you know, there's video, of course, of everybody just gathering. A good 30, 40 of them all went up on the little dance stage where they were doing the, you know, Just Dance 3 or whatever demo. So they all went up there and they all did, like, you know, dancing at the same time, and while the rest of us were down on the floor, and, you know, people were just losing it. The Ubisoft people also got, like, video and pictures with everybody because they wanted to show off just the enormous amount of support that they were getting, because it was the biggest group, you know, meetup group that was there all weekend.
Oh no, it's fun. I've participated in Star Trek ones. I even participated in a Legend of the Seeker one at one time. And you're right. It's, you know, it's a group of fellow fans, or uber fans, as, you know, I'd like to think of them. And so you all have that, you know, you have that in common, and it's a nice bond to have, even though you might not really know these people or really see them again afterwards. But for in that moment, yeah, you're all one family. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and the sheer number of people that now, you know, we're all following each other on Facebook. It's kind of neat that, you know, instant friends, you know, it's like, oh,
yes,
we have something in common. But now here's the somewhat odd thing, you know, call this the small world of conventions or whatever you want to. The guy who organizes the Assassin's Creed meetup at New York Comic Con is also the guy who organizes the Mass Effect cosplay meetups at Dragon Con.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the same group that helped Travis Donovan of Under Sedation Live set up the renewal of vows with him and his wife that he surprised his wife with while they were at Dragon Con this year. So I went up and was saying, hey, you know, Travis says hi, and the look that this guy got on his face was just like, how the hell do you know him? It's like, not only do we know each other, we're hosts of shows on the same network.
Yeah.
And he just was like, you've got to be kidding me. And so, you know, that really was neat that we were able to tell stories like of you know, he was telling me behind the scenes stuff of some of the preparations, and that was a really cool thing. But, you know, after we were done, we're right outside of the booth, and one of the main open areas on the floor is right by the Ubisoft booth, where they have people come and pre-order games. And so they were taking pre-orders. Basically, the deal was, as they tend to do, is that, okay, you see the presentation or play the demos, now over there you can go and pre-order, and if you do, you get a t-shirt for the game of your choice. Okay, that's nice. So they were obviously, you know, trying to sell the new Assassin's Creed game that's coming out, and they're like, we just got 60 or 70 people to give us free publicity and draw people to our booth. So, you know, we're standing there and we're all just talking, and the next thing we know, because it's now noon, it's Saturday, the main day, you know where this is going. I don't think I moved from that spot for a good hour and a half. Because just as soon as the first group of us were like, hey, can we take your picture? That was it. You're done. Because now you've got a bunch of us, and as soon as one person stops to take a group picture, now everybody wants to take the group picture. And yeah, it just keeps going and going and going. It was like, I think I know how they feel now.
And your suit was still very cool, right, and comfortable.
Yeah. This big open area that I mentioned, it's also the one that had all the freaking lights. Yeah, I was sweating bullets. After that was done, I was at one point I was just like, as soon as we got a break, I'm like, I'm getting a bottle of water. Who else wants one? I'm going on a water run because we're all about to pass out.
Yeah, you might want to get one of those Camelback things in the future and just tuck those somewhere.
Yeah, exactly right. That was an eye-opening thing, and of course for the rest of the day I was kind of walking around in costume. I didn't. You know, some people went and, you know, immediately changed out because they wanted to just walk around. I was like, no, I'm gonna stick it through because I also had plans for that evening, and, you know, they were like, hey, come in costume. I was like, okay, I might as well just stick out the day. Plus, I knew I was going to be spending a lot of time sitting in the main room just watching the panels, so I figured I'd have a rest. And yeah, there were plenty of times when it's just, you know, you're just walking around and somebody's like, hey, you know, take your picture. And let's just say, when you're in the assassin's gear and you've got the hidden blade and, you know, they think that's the coolest thing ever, they're like, not just take your picture with me, but, hey, assassinate me on film. Okay. Sure. That's a good shot.
So, John, if you don't mind me asking just really quick, I don't want to, you know, I know you have more stuff to talk about, but
sure.
Did you actually sew this costume yourself?
No, a lot of it came pre-done.
I want to say that because, you know, online you do see a lot of people talk about sewing their own costumes, but there are a significant number of people who don't, or just they will still get a basic costume and just sort of amp it up a little bit along the way. And any of that is fine for anybody that has, you know, any interest in doing, you know, sort of showing up at one of these conventions in costume. It doesn't have to be the most perfect screen adaptation of the to ever happen, you know.
Absolutely.
If you like walking around in it and having fun, you're good. Don't sweat it.
Most of the people, I mean, the ones that were the most impressive were the ones that were not screen perfect. They were more just what the person put together as their original kind of contribution to something that they really enjoy. The caveat that I will say is that I didn't sew the whole thing together. I did wind up kind of getting a jump start by getting pieces that I could put together. But then there were certain alterations that I had to make. That I did do. I'm not saying that they were done particularly well, because I'm certainly not that skilled at it at this point. But there were things that I wanted to do that I didn't get around to, but when it came to, okay, I've got to figure out a way to put this and this together, and there's no real easy way to fasten things, it's like, yeah, I'm doing alterations. you know, and there were, of course, things that I had to do throughout the morning prepping, and then throughout the day in order to keep everything together. And all those things that people say and complain about on Facebook about the, you better be carrying bobby pins and
safety glue pins, yeah,
and
yeah.
safety pins around because you're going to need them, and you're going to need to know how to put on everything on with, without it showing. Yeah, they're right. there were a couple times I was pulling a little thing of glue out and refooting something on because it would snag, or I'd bang into something and something would move that shouldn't move. And yeah, it's one thing when you test out putting on the vambraces and the blade assembly on your arm when you're just wearing, you know, you just have a bare arm or you're wearing a regular shirt. It's a whole nother thing when you have a relatively silken shirt and you realize, oh wait, this moves a lot easier than it did when it was just on my arm. I got to figure out how to stop that from happening. So sometimes you have the inelegance of shoving a napkin up there. but it worked. And then let's see, later on that day, there were panels I wanted to go to and I wound up not going to because I was hanging out with the people in the picture taking and just didn't get in line in time. But I did make it to the main room in order to see the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. panel, which was Fitzsimmons introducing a full-length episode, which we then were screened. And it was the one that aired this week. So it was like, oh, okay. Odd, but...
So did you get the review in time then?
Well, since I wasn't the one writing the review.
Oh, okay. No.
But I did warn Bronstum he would definitely want to be on top of that one. That was followed by the Walking Dead panel, and as usual, that is like the rock star panel of the con. It always is. I had a great time there with that one. They showed some footage from much later in the season. Things that if you're a comic reader, you could anticipate happening, and maybe thought to yourself, there's no way they can pull that off on TV. Yes. Yes, they can. And yes, they did. Because I believe that my reaction when I saw that scene and they got to the big reveal was, oh, shit. I can't believe they just did that. So, yeah, there's some really good stuff coming up this season. And there are, of course, always going to be the haters that think that not enough happens on the show. But I'm sorry. There's a lot of love out there for a reason. And I can say right now, if they ever do anything bad to Daryl, they're going to have a riot on their hands. They're going to have a revolution. Because, holy cow, when he comes out onto the stage, just, it's insanity. And it was actually pretty cool because they showed some stuff. They you know, again, Robert Kirkman was there and he was talking about some of the plans for the show, some of the differences. They had this great reveal because Abraham, it's now been announced, is going to be on this season. And so the actor that plays him, they actually didn't reveal that he was cast until the panel. And the guy who was going to play him was in a costume, like a disguise, sitting a row behind me, like three seats away, gets up and just starts ranting at the panel about the, how could you not have a character like Abraham on the show? Are you a cowardly mother? Beep, beep. Basically getting in character, right? And calling out the writers for the show. And then, and like, everyone is just kind of sitting there like, what's going on? What's going on? And then finally, he's like, they're like, you know what? You're right. We should cast that. Why don't you play him? And then everyone's like, oh, wait. Okay, we get it now. But it was really a good way to reveal it. And one of the first questions was this little girl. And I think that she maybe was... how do I put that? Maybe like Asperger's or something. She was a little bit socially awkward, but she was probably like 8 or 9. And the first thing she was is that, you know, she really wanted to say hello to the guy who plays Daryl and everyone else. So they actually brought her up on the stage, and for the rest of the panel, she got to basically hang out with the cast and like sit on, you know, their laps throughout the whole panel. It was crazy. It was like, wow, this kid has a story to tell. So yeah, there were some pretty cool things that happened in that panel. And that one's always fun. I mean, they just really pull out all the stops for that one. It was weird, though, because it wasn't the last panel on Saturday night. It was the next to last one. And the last one was for a movie called Hercules the Legend.
Wait, like the Kevin Sorbo hard
no,
release?
No, not even that. It was it's like some new movie that like Rennie Harlan is directing. I don't even know the guy who's playing the lead role. But they were they had to follow up The Walking Dead. How just demoralizing is it to have a room that is filled to capacity with another like 5,000 or 6,000 people waiting in the queue room just so they can watch it on the screen? And then when that's over, watching all of them walk out because they have no interest in your movie. I mean, it was the weirdest thing. Like, why would you have that as kind of like your headline, you know, panel? It didn't make any sense to me. I certainly left because I was on my way to the other party, which was the one that it was the first kind of unofficial after party that they put up on the thing, and it was at this place called Time Scare. It's like a kind of Halloween event that they do right near the Port Authority. And that was pretty cool.
Port Authority can be scary enough, but yeah, wow, right? If they want to amp it up, hey, more power to them.
Exactly. It was pretty cool. It was, you know, wasn't particularly pleased with the bar service, but, you know, there were a lot of people that were in costume, and it was a good group, about 100 people. And they had a costume contest. And so I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. Everybody's signing up for it. I'll just sign up for it. No problem. So, you know, it's getting close to midnight, and I'm doing my usual, like, okay, just rum and coke maintenance type thing. And I swear, after like 4 or 5, I'm sitting there, and I'm like, this thing's kicking my butt. I'm pretty sure they just stopped putting the coke in after a while.
Well, you know, they still have to color it, so, you know, you get a little bit,
but I was like, wow, okay, this is, like, hitting me very strong. And then and it only really, you know, came to me later that I had spent most of the day getting
sweating,
dehydrated and hadn't really eaten hardly anything, so it's like, oh, gee, I can't imagine why.
You laugh, but you know you're so captivated by some of the stuff going on and seeing not only seeing people in costumes but the panels and talking with somebody who you're waiting in line with that you really can forget to eat.
Yeah, it does happen.
Yeah.
I think I figured out I ate a grilled cheese sandwich at like 11 that day, and then like a small bag of popcorn in the main panel room, and that was probably it.
I know sometimes I almost feel guilty, like not going to, you know, either going late to a panel or leaving early because I want to eat. I realize you have to give in once in a while.
But the thing is like, I've got guaranteed seating. I'm not going to lose my spot because I go and get food. I can walk out and walk right back in. Why am I being an idiot? But yeah, it didn't even occur to me until later. I was like, wow, I really didn't eat anything today. But I wound up winning third place in the contest. So,
all right, way to go. So what does third place get you in a contest like that?
It got me a limited edition Marvel bust of the Rhino, which some people will find ironic. But yeah, I was kind of stunned by that. But it was judged by, I think his name is Alexis Cruz. He's the guy who played Scarra, the kid that O'Neill quote-unquote adopted on SG-1.
Okay.
A girl who played a young Vulcan woman in Star Trek Into Darkness, and this third person who I can't remember. Sorry, third person. I don't remember you. But it was like, okay, that's neat. So, you know, those were the people I was talking to and had absolutely no idea who they were. But I was like, wow, okay, that's cool. So that was an unexpected little thing. So I think I rolled into my hotel room at like 2:30 in the morning, which was actually probably a lot earlier than other people. But yeah, I spent a good 18 hours in costume, because I think I got kind of half done up when I left at like 9 to get over to the convention center, and then I spent the rest of the time before 10 o'clock in the VIP lounge prepping up the rest of it, which is what a lot of people wound up doing. I mean, it was just like last year, I saw a lot of people doing that. They just bring everything with them, and then they can get in early, so they don't bother prepping before they go. They just bring it with them and do it in the room. So that was Saturday. Saturday was the big banner day, and so that was fun. But then Sunday was kind of my, oh, dear Lord, I need to hydrate and sober up day.
I mean, you're like, as you said, you start early in the morning, you're going till late at night, and at sometimes you have to take a break just to recharge. You know,
that's right.
You like to think you're 18 still, but you're not.
No. No, I was definitely pushing my endurance a little bit.
What costume won first place?
There was a guy who was dressed up in this super good Black Panther outfit. He won second. First place was the Mad Hatter from Alice in Wonderland, the Tim Burton version.
Oh.
That was really well done. You would have liked the one who was dressed up as the Confessor. She was nice. So Sunday was actually my kind of wrap-up day. It's also Kids Day, so I don't like to roam around too much because people with strollers on the dealer's floor. Yeah. This was the first time that I was actually planning to stay the whole day, right up to the end of the convention. Usually I leave early, but the panels happened to be the way that they were. I had to leave. I didn't want to leave. I had to wait until the end. I saw the Defiance panel, which was really cool.
Was it well attended?
It was very well attended. It was hard for some people to get in. But a lot of people, and they had most of the cast up there. I mean, granted, there were 5 people from the cast. 4 of them were women. Edmund would have loved it. Jamie Murray was there. Julie Vans. Stephanie Leonidas was up there. Yeah, it was nice. Very pretty. You can see the pictures on the Facebook. And I had to go directly from there over to the Person of Interest panel, which had Jim Caviezel, Tahaji Henson, I believe is her name, Amy Acker, Sarah Shahi, so all the ladies there as well. We're on that panel, but that was where it was really useful to have that VIP ticket, because trying to get from the main stage over to the Empire stage for the Person of Interest panel, when everybody was already in that room because they had done the Adventure Time panel beforehand, so it was like people just roosted for the Person of Interest panel. Just being able to walk in and have a seat was nice. I don't think I would have gotten in otherwise, but the Person of Interest one was really good. Edmund would have loved to have seen one of the scenes that they showed that I think will be on in a couple weeks, if not this coming week. I had a little bit of time to finish my roaming on the floor and went down to Artist Alley to try and meet some people that I had missed, but unfortunately they weren't there. But then I got back to the main stage. They had the Doctor Who Big Finish audio drama panel that happened to have Colin Baker, the Sixth Doctor, as their main person. And that was a fun panel. That was really good. He was a hoot. Let's just put it that way. And the weekend ended up with the what was widely publicized, the Gillian Anderson, David Duchovny panel for kind of the X-Files reunion, I guess you could say.
Now, that's a heavy, what's the word I'm looking for? Almost teaser? Did any real news come out of it?
Oh, no. This was... Oh, boy. Okay, so... This was something where I was expecting... I've been to, you know, like last year, there was the Firefly 10th Anniversary panel. And there were a couple other things, like even the Doctor Who panel I just mentioned, where, you know, Colin Baker hasn't been on the show in how long? I mean, 25 years or whatever?
Yep.
These are people that own the fact that they were these characters. When you talk to Nathan Fillion, if you call him Captain Reynolds, he doesn't get insulted. He takes it as a point of pride. You know, there are people that they realize they play other roles, that but they don't get upset because they're defined by the roles that they played on these sci-fi shows. And that's what I think a lot of people were expecting David Duchovny and Gillian Anderson to be like. That's not what they were like. It was apparent to me after the first about 5 or 10 minutes that there were 3 possibilities. Either A, they were drunk, B, incredibly hungover, or C, just really didn't want to be there. Because they were making pains to make it very clear that they were not the characters, that they were just performing words off of a script, that the writers were the ones who were really responsible for the characters that they were playing, that, you know, and I'm like, that's not what these people want to hear. I get what you're saying, and I respect it from a certain point of view, but you sound like you don't even want to be here. And
well, there are a lot of stars who don't want to be. I mean, as you know, as you go to these things, you see that there are people that have no desire to be there. I don't know why they agreed to go with their agents to do it, or who knows, maybe they went in with an open mind and just can't stand the whole thing. But yeah, it happens all the time, and it's a shame because the stars that enjoy going have a ball and have a great time. The fans, you know, have a great time with them, and everybody's happy. I don't get it.
Yeah, I really don't either. And the impression I get from people who went and got like autographs and pictures with them was that they didn't really have that attitude there. So I don't know if it was that they were trying to be clever or witty by being kind of like acerbically, you know, kind of detached with everything. But it really felt like they were just struggling to even have the energy or interest in answering questions. They were just completely disconnected from the whole thing. And there were a couple times I was just turning to people and I was like, I really wish I had a sign that said awkward that I could just like put up because someone needs to say it. because it really got a little bit uncomfortable after a while. I will say though that completely not on their part, but you know, people are asking questions and it's just the same thing over and over again, and it's really just kind of disappointing. And in the very, very last question, this guy gets up and he's like, I have a two-part question. Usually those are the ones that are like, can you sign this for me or whatever else? And it's like, oh, you know, here we go. He's like, the first thing I'm asking for is not really a question, it's a blessing. And the second question isn't really to you, it's to my girlfriend. And the room exploded.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because it's like, you got to be kidding, right? So, of course, it's a proposal, and, you know, they're completely, you know, gobstopped by this whole thing. So they're like, yeah, come on up, you know, take pictures with us. This is amazing. I can't believe you just did that. So that kind of saved the panel because, you know, it was like, you can't really leave on that note in a bad mood. You know, it's like, okay. You know, the fans, the con-goers themselves kind of saved the end of the con. Because it's like, yeah, this is their main room, this is their big thing that they were advertising on, and if it ended on that kind of detached and somewhat disinterested note, it would have been a kind of downer way to end it. But it was like, oh, okay, good on you, dude. You managed to save it for a few people. So when people were like, well, how did it go? I was like, well, it started with you know, kind of started with a wedding, and it kind of ended with the promise of a wedding. So there was symmetry. And over the weekend, one of the people that I went to high school with married his boyfriend. So it was like, wow, this was a weekend of all kinds of unexpected wedding stuff. So there you go. So yeah, the nice thing was is knowing I was getting out late, knowing I was leaving when a lot of people were all trying to get out, I took my time getting out from the hotel. And so it was not nearly as hard to get out of the city as it usually is when I am trying to get out and everyone's leaving at the same time. So, but this was the first time I was there from literally beginning to end, the whole time. And I was in the city for the whole thing, was able to go out to a lot of the events. So really, in a lot of ways, I consider this to be my training for Dragon Con.
It sounds like it was a good start, yeah?
Yeah, it's a good start. And certainly, I'm looking forward to making a few upgrades to my cosplay for
I have
it's too much fun. You know, I'll say this, and you know, there's I'm sure a lot of people that can understand this, and I've already heard a lot of other people that have the same sentiment. It's like, you know, I, you know, believe it or not, do suffer from a certain amount of social anxiety, and cons can be difficult when you're in that kind of thing, because you've got to get over that to be able to just talk to people at, you know, when you're in line or while you're at a panel, just, you know, talking to the people around you. And sometimes you just want to get out of your own head when you're dealing with those kinds of things. And I'll say, when you get into, you know, a cosplay situation, especially something that people know and you can really just kind of get into that mindset for the day, you can really just kind of skip right past the whole anxiety thing, because it's like, you don't need to be yourself for the day. You're people aren't looking at you as you per se. So, I mean, from that perspective, I completely understand. There are a lot of people that say the same thing, that they like to go to cons and be in costume and so forth, because it is a good way for them to get past some of that anxiety that they would otherwise feel in a huge crowd of people that they don't know. And plus, then they're instantly part of a community of people that are doing the same thing. And you kind of all have each other's backs. You know, when I needed someone to give me a hand, there were 10 people around me that completely understood where I was coming from and did not hesitate. You know, so it was... That really appealed to me, the fact that there's that sense of community as well, that even if you walk into a con where you don't know a whole lot of people, you can still find people that you have a rapport with. And also there's that way for you to just, like, you know, if I don't want to, you know, engage people in as myself, so to speak, I can just kind of play. And, you know, people are still going to eat that up, because that's kind of what they, when they look at you, that's what they're expecting anyway. But it was fun. I mean, there's also the part of it of just, you know, being creative. It's a different way of doing it, and I've made no illusion of the fact that part of the fun of going to a con in and of itself, especially as my job gets a lot more complicated and busy, is that it's just a chance to get away from and kind of do something different and kind of go into into definitely vacation mode, I guess you could say. But I enjoyed it quite a bit, and I'm looking forward to PAX East this year, getting upgrades and some of the things that didn't quite work exactly the way I wanted them to this time, and maybe work on them a little bit more and then see what I can do for Dragon Con.
Well,
where it's 1,000 degrees,
well, you know,
in the shade.
I was about to say, but you know, John, that's only one costume. You know, typically you need to change daily, both for olfactory reasons.
Oh, yes.
Because you should expand your portfolio.
Oh, I already have ideas. I've been talking with my friends who cosplay at Dragon Con.
Oh, okay.
I've got some ideas already coming, some that are very easy and some not so easy. But
please tell me they don't involve duct tape. Anyway.
No, they don't involve duct tape. Oh, God.
Thank you.
No. But, I mean, you know, you get into those practical discussions of materials, what would be comfortable to wear in Hotlanta. So, plus, you know, a lot of choices out there, let's just put it that way. But I guess we'll just have to find out when that time comes. But that was it. I mean, that was 4 days of revelry in the big city. Definitely looking forward to next year. I think that a lot of people were saying that even if the programming was a little bit unusual this year, that overall it was a very good and probably one of the best New York Comic Cons in some time. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there's also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for the show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...